Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
Are you ready for helicopters, talking pictures, and self-governing Irishmen? It's June 1922.
100 years from today.
Your World News Update. The day before the Irish election, the new Free States draft constitution was made public. In a short statement in the House of Commons, Mr. Churchill said it met the terms of the Anglo-Irish Agreement and is substantially modelled on the constitutions of the other British dominions, especially Canada's. It creates a Governor-General as the King's representative and imposes an oath of allegiance to His Majesty that Republicans such as Mr. De Valera find so difficult. On the other hand, the Daily Chronicle in London is relaxed about some of the Constitution's local variations. Quote, "No one on this side will mind if the Irish prefer, in quasi-French fashion, to style their Prime Minister President of the Executive Council." So at least he can be addressed as Mr. President, even if he is merely the King's First Minister. Who will that man be? We now have the results of the election for the Provisional Parliament. Although the two wings of the deeply split Sinn Féin came to a pre-election agreement, at the end of the count, Michael Collins' pro-Free State faction has won 58 seats, or six short of a majority. Eamon de Valera's anti-Free State faction has won 36 seats, with the rest divided between the Labour Party, the Farmers' Party, and various independents. Strange to have a parliament in which the same party provides both the government and the opposition, but that is another example of how the people of Southern Ireland are doing things their way. We've pulled the cork out of Ireland, let's also pull the cork out of Åland. Åland is part of Finland, but it is autonomous, not by the decision of the Finnish government, but by the League of Nations, which also mandated that it be demilitarised. Now its regional assembly has convened for its first plenary session in Mariehamn. Elsewhere, the messy aftermath of the Great War may be ameliorating. The Permanent Court of International Justice of the League of Nations, referred to in the press as the World Court, opened for its first regular sessions, convening at the Carnegie Peace Palace at The Hague in the Netherlands.
Every morning, every evening, ain't we got fun? Not much money, oh, but money.
Not a lot of fun in today's Vienna, the shriveled rump of a once mighty empire, and not much money either. But things are looking up on that front. France has granted Austria a loan of 55 million francs. In Moscow, the Council of People's Commissars has rejected the commercial treaty signed with the Kingdom of Italy just last month. The Bolshevik regime has also announced the creation of the Bashkir Autonomous Soviet Socialist Republic to provide limited self-government for the Bashkir people within the Russian Soviet Republic. China boy in Peking, Li Huanhong, has arrived at the capital to become President of the Republic of China. His first official act was to appoint Wu Tingfang as Prime Minister. Mr. Wu is well known as the first Chinaman to be called to the English bar, indeed the first Chinese barrister on earth. We have a new China boy in Canton. General Chen Chungming, formerly the governor of Guangdong province, has captured Canton and precipitated the departure of Sun Yat-sen and other southern secessionist leaders. General Chen says that former members of the old Chinese government are in favor of plans to reunite the South with Li Huanhong's government at Peking. The United States has prohibited the sale of liquor for 2.5 years now. How's that going? Well, Ralph Day, director of the U.S. Bureau of Prohibition, says that there has been a 79% decrease in alcohol-related deaths.
Love her by radio. You will find it radio. If you want to reach your heart's desire, won't have to send her word by wire. You never buy her, love her by radio. Even when you're all alone, think of all the fun that they can have both night and day, listening in to what the lovey-doveys have to say. I'll bet the things they hear would make a bachelor's hair turn gray when you love her by the radio phone.
You can love her by radio once again to the sound of President Harding. He has already appeared on a naval base station, but Mr. Harding has now become the first American president to be heard on a private radio station, addressing an audience in Baltimore at the dedication of a memorial site for Francis Scott Key, the author of this well-known song. At the U.S. Navy's Bureau of Aeronautics in Maryland, various experts were thrilled by the inventor Henry Berliner's demonstration of a new kind of flying machine that has no wings but relies on horizontally spinning rotors for takeoff and thrust. At College Park, Mr. Berliner raised and lowered his machine 3 times, keeping it hovering at 7 feet off the ground. And then he flew it around a half-mile track. He calls it a helicopter, from the French word hélicoptère, hélico from the Greek word helix, and ptère from the Greek word pteron, meaning wing. President Harding has signed into law the Joint Service Pay Readjustment Act, which provides for equal policies on pay across the U.S. Armed Forces. For example, officers will now receive their compensation in regular pay periods rather than being paid quarterly or annually. Higher rates of pay will be instituted for all ranks. As you'll recall, the U.S. Coast Guard was formed just 7 years ago from the merger of the Revenue Cutter Service and the Life-Saving Service, and there was some talk that it was to be folded into the U.S. Navy. Not so. The Coast Guard will be a full, separate branch of the armed services. Oldsmobile may be merry, but things aren't so merry among the Fords and Lincolns. 4 months after the Ford Motor Company purchased the Lincoln Motor Company, Lincoln's founder, Henry Leland, is out of a job along with his son, Wilfred. A spokesman for Henry Ford says that after a detailed look at Lincoln's operations, Mr. Ford insisted on the resignations of both men.
Where is Zero all the year old? Lives an Eskimo. He looks funny with his honey sitting in the snow. There were a happy couple, all dressed up in furs. Warm as an oven, while they are loving, his water cars. He sighs and whispers, oogie, oogie, wah, wah, oogie, oogie, wah, wah. She sighs and answers, oogie, oogie, wah, wah, too. Now don't that sound absurd? Just a crazy word. I don't mean much to you, I know, but it means an awful lot to an Eskimo. And oh boy, they love that oogie, oogie, wah, wah, oogie, oogie, wah, wah. That makes a person curious to know. But you'll get fooled just the way I was, 'cause the word don't mean what you think it does. Oogie, oogie, wah, wah means I want a mama to an Eskimo.
Where it's zero all the year, oh, lives an Eskimo. He looks funny with his honey sitting in the snow. That may have sufficient verisimilitude for the patrons of Tin Pan Alley, but if you seek something more authentic, there is Robert Flaherty's new photoplay, Nanook of the North. Picturegoers are enthralled by this true story of Eskimo life in the Canadian Arctic. It's not made in California with artificial flakes of snow and professional actors in funny costumes. No, it was filmed in the Arctic and stars real-life Eskimos in scenes of real life. But they are thrilling New York audiences as deliriously as Valentino does. Would you like your motion pictures with talking? With dialogue that can be heard and with other sounds? Joseph Tikhochina of the University of Illinois has given a public demonstration of a picture one cannot merely view, but hear. In the short film, his wife Helena appears and announces to the audience, "I will ring," at which point she rings a bell whose sounds can be heard. Next, Mr. Tikhochina's colleague, Ellery Payne of the University's Department of Electrical Engineering, recites audibly the Gettysburg Address. By comparison with Nanook of the North, it is a primitive work, and it is unclear whether there is any demand for a hybrid art form combining a motion picture with a Broadway play. In sports news, the Chestnut Thoroughbred Pillory, following his victory in the Preakness, has now won the Belmont Stakes. On an otherwise ordinary afternoon, Springfield, Ohio, saw two new world records set. The first was by U.S. Army Lieutenant Lee Wade, whose twin-engine Martin bomber climbed higher than any other flying machine has ever done, 24,206 feet. At that world record altitude, Captain A.W. Stevens then opened the door and leapt out, setting a second record for the world's highest parachute jump. During the free fall, Captain Stevens' oxygen tank was torn off, but he eventually came down safely near Jamestown after a descent that took half an hour. An afternoon breeze blew through New York City with gale force winds of up to 100 miles per hour. It lasted just 12 minutes, and at the end of that 12 minutes, 45 New Yorkers were dead, including seven killed when a 70-foot-high Ferris wheel in the Bronx crashed to earth. In Queens, New York, much of the Auvergne neighborhood was leveled by a devastating fire that has left 10,000 people homeless, but amazingly appears not to have killed a single New Yorker.
She was my blushing bride.
breeze has blown through northwestern Wisconsin in the form of lethal tornadoes. More than 50 people are injured and at least 25 dead, including 18 residents of Prairie Farm in Barron County. That is a lot of dead in a village of just 300 people.
See that ragtime couple over there?
Where?
Watch them throw their fiolas in the air.
Sure.
Snap their fingers, honey, I declare. It's a bear, it's a bear, it's a bear.
It's a bear, it's a bear, so beware. Joseph Duret emigrated from France to America and was thereafter known as Frenchy Duret. He was a trapper and poacher who settled north of Yellowstone National Park. Monsieur Duret caught a grizzly bear in one of his traps. He went to retrieve his prize and the bear killed him. The remnants of his body were found the following evening. William Gowland was an Englishman who, despite having no training as an archaeologist, became known as the father of Japanese archaeology, excavating numerous burial mounds of imperial mausolea. He is dead at 79. William Lancaster wrote over 40 nautical yarns for boys under the pen name Harry Collingwood. As a storyteller, said the Spectator, Mr. Collingwood is not surpassed. He died suddenly while visiting his sister's home for the funeral of her husband. Harry Collingwood was 79. Antoinette Leach was an Indiana court stenographer who in 1893 sued for the right to practice law in that state, and she won. The pioneer of women's rights is dead at 63. Wolfgang Kapp was a Prussian civil servant who lent his name to the so-called Kapp Putsch just 2 years ago, which chased the Weimar government out of Berlin and on to Dresden. Alas for Herr Kapp, his coup collapsed after 2 days and he was forced to flee to Sweden. He returned just 2 months ago to defend himself at trial, but is instead dead of cancer at 63. Fleming D. Cheshire was a businessman and consul general of the United States in China during the Boxer Rebellion, at the height of which he was reported to have been killed. He survived and spent the rest of his time there promoting closer trading relations between America and China. A stroke in 1915 during a visit to New York left him paralyzed and ended his preeminent role in Sino-American relations. Mr. Cheshire is dead at 73. Major Hesketh Hesketh Pritchard was born in Jhansi on the plateau of central India and became an acclaimed marksman, big game hunter, cricketer and novelist. As a writer, he created the roguish Spaniard Don Q, whose exploits were adapted very successfully for the London stage just last year. As a cricketer, he was a strong fast bowler for the Marylebone Cricket Club, toured the West Indies with the MCC and was selected for the gentleman 3 years in succession at the Gentlemen versus Players match at Lord's. As a marksman, he had a good war and transformed the fortunes of British snipers. Dismayed by how many Tommies were being lost to German bullets on the Western Front, he ordered up at his own expense papier-mâché heads from a theatrical wig maker and costumier. The heads were held up on sticks just above the trench to draw the fire of the Hun and thus betray the location of the German snipers. These and other innovations are estimated to have saved over 3,500 Empire and Allied lives. Major Hesketh Hesketh Pritchard was gassed in the trenches, and that is believed to have contributed to his death from septicemia at the age of 45. And that's the way of the world. June 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Markstein Enterprises and O'Kill Media, all rights reserved.